Second stardom, Dave Calderwood.
Virginia Kaiser.
Chris Fuller.
Bernadette DiPiero.
Ezra Merritt, AWL.
And then Nathan Mitchell, General Services Analyst.
And Linda Kornheim.
Okay. And then Linda, you have the floor.
All right. So shall we begin with, there's no members of the public, are there?
Looks like we might have one.
I'm a member of the public. I don't have any comment today.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Well, welcome everyone.
And then Linda, just to let you know, Tasha is joining us as well. Oh, no problem. Come on in. No worries. Here's an agenda for you. You're very welcome. Okay, so we're all here, minus Scott. Oh, and Sasha as well. Yeah.
Great. That may turn up later. Do we have any changes or additions to the agenda? Hearing none, I'd like to call for an acknowledgement to the audio minutes of the August 2023 meeting.
I will acknowledge.
Thank you, David. Next on our agenda seems to be Green Hill activity. Do we have a report?
So we do not have a Green Hill representative at today's meeting.
Okay. Well then, how about if we move on to Lane County Animal Services presentation?
That sounds great. So thank you, Linda. So one thing that the team wanted to do was just to provide the committee just with an overview of some of the accomplishments that we've or things that we've accomplished, and then some of the progress activities that we've performed in the last 3 years, from 2020 to 2023. So through this presentation, feel free to interject or ask any questions. If anything comes up, we're happy to dive into things in greater detail. Let's see, I get it to work. There we go, perfect. So the first thing we wanted to really talk about was just kind of the mission of Lane County Animal Services. And this is just kind of a brief mission statement, but ultimately our goal is to ensure public and animal health, safety, and quality of life within our community, and bringing about and maintaining an environment in which people and animals can live harmoniously. So how that's really kind of broken down is into a few specific goals that might not be all-inclusive, but are generally kind of our main priorities as a program, which would first and foremost be the protection of animals and citizens of Lane County, provision of shelter services for Lane County, educating the community on code enforcement, safe practices, available resources, and triage, and fostering partnerships with external agencies to develop a network of resources. So pretty much every function that we have as a program aligns in some way with one of those four primary goals. Isabel, is there anything you wanted to add to that?
You did great. Covered everything I would have said.
Well, thanks. Okay. Any questions about that slide? Okay. So where we are currently, so as of August 2023, it's been, we worked on this since then, but as of August, our program is fully staffed. We have four FTE, or full-time employees, and then one part-time 520, part-time employee assisting with administrative duties. And we do have plans to increase that 520 position to a 1040 as well. So for the first time in quite some time, we have two administrative employees full-time and two animal welfare officers as well. So we're in a great place as a program. Equipment-wise, we have two service trucks and then one equipment trailer, and then we also have one livestock trailer, which we will show some more information on a little bit later in the presentation. But it was one that, thanks to the committee, we were able to purchase through the use of the Harriet Ruby Smith Trust. So thank you. Our officers have completed recently some required safety and animal welfare trainings and certifications. Isabel, I, I believe there is there one that you recently took that you would like to?
I took one about 3 months ago, just a fire emergency response training, and then I'm going to another Code 3 animal welfare training in 2 weeks to finish my certification as a state certified AWL.
Perfect, perfect. So one thing we really do pride ourselves in as a program is giving staff, you know, training opportunities, developing, and, you know, really ensuring that our officers have all the skills and certifications needed to perform their duties. So training is a big piece for us. And then in that same way, our lead office assistant, who handles a lot of the dispatching functions, was recently promoted to a senior position. We're really excited about that, and has graduated from an internal leadership program. So we have not to probably go into too much detail, but it's about a 10-week program that staff are selected for. It's not a very populous program, but she graduated from that and is using those learned skills in her new leadership role. So very excited about that. And then kind of where we're going, just to go over some of the things on our either to-do list or some of our recent accomplishments. So kind of first off, looking at expanding services, we recently established an intergovernmental agreement, or an IGA, with the cities of Westphal and Lowell. What that essentially, and Isabel can probably speak to that a little bit better, but what that essentially does is, because they were really kind of small communities, they didn't really have an animal control agency of their own to perform some of the duties that they needed. So they reached out to us, and we were able to help facilitate that. So they essentially notify us when there's an issue or something that they'd want to get kind of checked on, and then our officers will drive out to those areas and perform those duties for them.
What other small cities do you take in? Blue River or McKenzie or Oak Ridge or any of them? What other ones do you already take care of?
Sure.
So we take care of the entire McKenzie area, really, but those cities we don't have an IGA with, we just cover them as county. It's just cities that already have like a center of government who kind of have their own little thing, like Westphal, where they're incorporated communities next to a larger city. Those we have IGAs with. Everything else, we just basically cover if they ask for help. We don't necessarily have a set IGA, we just cover them as parts of county.
And then another recent accomplishment is we implemented an online complaint form option for citizens so that we could gather feedback and kind of learn from that feedback. And that, to my knowledge, has been working pretty well.
Can you send us a link to that?
We can, yep, I certainly can.
Yes, please.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Happy to. We adjusted to the pandemic through continued provision of services. So, as probably all organizations, the pandemic was a tough time. I can honestly say, just in my working with the team, that despite the pandemic leading to some shifts in services and whatnot, our team quickly adapted. We were still assisting people over the phone with licensing renewals and whatnot, even though maybe we weren't able to assist maybe as many in person. Things just, the services didn't really stop. They just shifted more to either online or telephone. So really, really proud of our progress with that. In terms of leveraging partnerships, so just like we mentioned kind of with the IGA for Westphal and Lowell, we're currently working on an IGA or contract with the Oregon Coast Humane Society. So what that'll do is really kind of broaden our range of coverage for the Florence area as well. We thus far had a great working relationship with OCHS, so we're really looking forward to working, with a closer relationship with them. Essentially, the relationship might look a little bit different, but we're hoping that it gives us kind of a similar network of coverage that we kind of have with Green Hill at the moment. They're a smaller humane society, so they're not going to be able to perform all the same duties that Green Hill can, but it will hopefully give us a little bit more coverage. Isabel, is there anything I left out?
No, that's about it. Since we've started the IGA, they're able to help when citizens bring in stray from the county. We can help them with that, make sure that there's the money there for the people to bring in the stray animals. Instead of having to take a dog from Florence all the way back to Eugene in the truck, If we have pick up a stray, we can drop it off at Oregon Coast Humane. They take care of it. It's just, it's been a huge relief.
Right on. And then, on that same kind of breath, we're doing continued work with Green Hill Humane Society. Our contract is coming up for renewal pretty soon. So we are currently working on doing some analysis to figure out, you know, cost measures and whatnot. But we are looking forward to, you know, our continued relationship with Green Hill. And then we've also, and we'll talk a little bit more about this in a later slide as well, but for emergency kind of response efforts, we established a memorandum of understanding, or an MOU, with the Lane County Sheriff's Office Mounted Posse. And so Isabel can probably speak a little bit more to that than I can, but it's just another example of where we're trying to really leverage partnerships as much as possible. And then lastly, kind of talking about developing our team. And this is really kind of just somewhat of a repeat of our last slide, but we've successfully onboarded 2 animal welfare officers, so fully staffed there. We've hired a 520 employee who has done a fantastic job assisting the admin team with some of their duties, which include like the mailing out of license renewal reminders and whatnot. So fantastic job there. And then our lead office assistant has recently been promoted to a senior position as well, which provides a little bit more leadership for the team through that role. So I think we've, you know, honestly, I think we've made some fantastic progress in the last 2 to 3 years. So some statistics. So a lot of these statistics, I wanted to take a few moments just to go over, because I know we've probably been providing these for quite some time, but I figured it might be useful to kind of go over the stat reports that we provide with every agenda. I guess the first question might be, and then if there are no questions, we probably don't have to spend too much time. But in reading these reports, are there ever any questions that you might have in terms of interpreting them? I know sometimes stats can be, you know, numbers can be kind of hard to interpret. So is there anything that sometimes stands out in terms of...
Were we able to tell that since we raised the amount that they could get on a spay and neuter coupon, if we had increased the amount of people getting the spay and neuter coupons?
So, great question. We will. That's actually talked about in one of the later slides.
Okay.
So happy to. Yep. But you know. So most of the stats that we'll show today are based on these same reports. They're pretty much just taking the multiple reports and combining them or consolidating them on one chart here.
So, I have a question.
Yes.
You mailed violation notices. I assume those are people that have the dogs that haven't renewed their license. Is that correct?
Correct. Yes.
How many of those pay?
That's a great question.
You have a percentage of just ignore it?
Yeah, we definitely have a percentage of just ignore it, but then we proceed to send out a citation if they ignore the violation notice.
So you do a follow-up when they ignore it?
Yes.
Good.
Yeah,
okay.
So
that's
it's...
All I want to know.
Yep.
And then, so this is so great slide to kind of start off with. So as you'll see, these are the mailed new license requests. So these are when we, I'm assuming, when we get record of from a local veterinary agency. Perfect. Of a new animal, then we send out these license requests telling them, hey, you know, now that you're on our radar, you will want to go through this process, you know, and then we list the benefits and whatnot.
I have something else.
Sure.
Considering how bad our economy is right now, people can't afford to do things.
Sure.
Some are having trouble buying groceries. I would imagine the violation notices are going to go up because that's going to be last on the thing that they can afford.
Right.
It would be advantageous for the county, and we've advocated this before and the county's never done it, was to get free PSA somewhere to let people know that these notices are being sent out.
Sure.
That a violation of the license, you're going to get dinged. Mm-hmm. And how much?
It's going to cost you more to not take care of it sooner.
It worked in Calgary big time. We've never done it here. And I know it works. And so that would help alleviate some of that, because that number is going to go up.
Sure, sure. That is true. And that's definitely something I think we can do. If nothing else, I think we can leverage our webpage to have that information.
Well, the webpage would help, but that's not the same as a PSA on TV.
Oh, sure. Okay.
PSA on TV is going to get to a lot of people.
Right.
Sure. Okay.
That
might be, yeah. I know there's a little more, I wouldn't say red tape to say, but, you know, but we can definitely inquire about it for sure. Okay. And then, let's see. So, yeah, so in looking at to that kind of point, if you look at the most recent range of stats, there are a few things probably that we'll notice in terms of, and I didn't do the calculations on this. We probably are trending higher on the mailed license violation notices, to your point.
Sure.
So I think that, you know, I think that is a stat we might see. I don't know about how much higher, but it likely will be higher than the previous months or previous fiscal years. But to kind of just give an idea, so in terms of the bandwidth of our, especially our admin staff when it comes to mailing these licenses and whatnot. So they essentially, per fiscal year, are responsible for mailing out close to about 15,000 documents per fiscal year, just based on the statistics alone. Sometimes it might actually, like in the first fiscal year in 2020 to 2021, it actually kind of surpassed 15 by a little bit. And this is essentially two employees now with an extra 520 as well. So this is also in terms of, and forgive me if I'm kind of jumping around, but that last column with the number of call cards and cases, so Isabel, correct me if I'm wrong, but so these are also kind of the dispatch records created by our administrative staff when they receive a dispatch request as well. Pretty decent numbers. And it looks like we will probably be, it looks like probably trending about in the same place as last fiscal year's. Doesn't look like it'll probably be much higher. It could be a little bit higher. But yeah, so just, you know, we wanted to kind of share this slide just to kind of give you an idea in terms of the amount of kind of documents and calls and whatnot that our admin team.
Maybe I missed it, but what are call card / cases?
Sure. So Isabel.
So whenever we get a call for service, someone calls in an incident, dog bite, animal neglect, welfare concern, we make a call card. And then each call card normally has at least two visits to the property on it, which our admin staff then have to take down. So there could be up to 15 different incidents of our admin going in and making edits to these, but essentially it's how many calls for service we get.
Okay. And then any questions about this slide? Okay. So the next one. So I know it's always a topic of discussion, but we did want to provide some statistics on animal licensing. So these are split into essentially two different categories. So we have our licenses sold by our animal services staff, and then our licenses sold by our partner vendors. Looking at trends, licensing numbers have decreased over the years. It looks like last fiscal year they actually went up a little bit higher than they did the previous fiscal year. But generally speaking, they either hover around the same amount or maybe, I guess combined, it actually would have been either right at the same place as last year or a little bit above it, maybe. But we'll see that a few vendors that previously were selling licenses no longer do so. They've informed us that either due to bandwidth or for whatever reason, we have kind of severed that portion of the relationship.
Do you have a requirement that the the rescue organizations other than Green Hill, have them licensed before they leave their facility?
I don't know if it's a requirement. I guess in terms of, and I could be completely wrong, so this is just my understanding. I don't know if we have the kind of the jurisdiction to require it. I think we can request it, and I think our team do request that. But I don't know if there's anything we can really do to force them essentially to do that.
I think we've addressed that or talked about it before, and I think he's right that they ask that they be licensed, but that's as far as it goes.
There's
if they
no
do, they do.
There's
if
no
they don't, they walk out.
Right.
So like with Green Hill, kind of the similar line, if Green Hill's sending home only licensing 250 pets, how many are they adopting out every year that are dogs? Why are we not including that in their adoption fee, and it's licensed and good to go, and we have all that content?
We also have to take into account that they're selling licenses for the cities, mm-hmm. so not all the animals that they're selling are going for county, so we can't have those numbers.
Gotcha.
So that is part of it.
Okay.
And then also, it is my understanding that to request a rescue to license for us, they have to be a licensed rescue with the Department of Agriculture, and not all rescues in this area are. But the bandwidth for licensed rescues, we need all the help we can get, you know.
Yeah. So great, both very great points. I think in terms of licensing, so I only made one just because I didn't know if everyone wanted their own copy. But I'm happy to share this, and I can definitely email it if we haven't already. But this is just an example of the spay and neuter brochure. It also talks a little bit about licensing as well that we provide to the public. So I think we have really kind of increased our provision of trying to, you know, provide licensing services and whatnot to really encourage that in the community. I think in some ways it's difficult because of our limited kind of jurisdiction and whatnot. But I think it is something that we continue to strive for and will continue to work towards.
Do you think it would be easier if the cities all had to use the same licensing facility as the county does?
It's definitely been discussed. There's logistically a little bit of work in order to facilitate that. So the city uses, I want to say, Pet Data or a different mm-hmm. third party vendor system for their licensing. We use one essentially that was made in-house. So it would probably be more the county adopting something like that, but I don't really know if the city is fond of their system. They totally could be, I don't know. But I think that's, logistically, there's a lot of moving pieces with that. So that I think that might end up being what happens at some point, but it could be some time before.
Yeah, having just one central thing where it's the same for everybody makes it super easy for Green Hill to be like, oh, your pet lives in Eugene, oh,
right.
your pet lives in Cottage Grove, this
right.
is the form, this fee is included, you can check out, go home now.
Yes.
You know, kind of thing makes it super, super simple, and then we have those pets in the system, we know that we can follow up with them, you know, and keep them licensed.
Yes. Part of the problem is the different fiefdoms want to hang on to their power. And it would be a logistical issue with getting the money to the right municipality.
Yeah.
And it would, if it could be set up, it would be great because it would make it a lot easier for Green Hill to sell licenses, for anybody to sell licenses, because you wouldn't have to, just a resident of the county is all it takes.
Right.
But the logistics are a problem.
Right.
And that's why it hasn't happened. We've been flogging that one for a long time.
But it is something we have discussed. So we have discussed, you know, the use of third-party systems, because I think the city has used Pet Data for quite some time. So they could be completely happy with it. But I think that's something. Yes, logistically we are kind of working.
They have to pay that.
They do. Yeah.
I was like, is it cost prohibitive? I mean, that's always the question: is it outrageously expensive?
For some of those systems, they can be. Yeah, and with. As you probably all know, with animal services related budgets, they tend to be pretty finite. Yeah.
But, just for clarity, are these licenses primarily and or only for dogs?
Yes.
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 Thanks.
Yes. And then any other questions on this slide though? No, thank you. Thank you for the feedback. And then you also wanted to talk about, because I know that is another point, with the spay and neuter program. So looking back at, and you'll find these in your stat reports, if you ever have a question about how many have been utilized per month, there'll always be on the, I guess it'd be the first page of the stat report, near in the bottom kind of section, or the second section, you'll see the two columns, spay and neuter voucher for dogs and spay and neuter voucher for cats. So we'll kind of see that it looks like voucher use has kind of decreased over the years. We did increase our spay and neuter voucher amount, and I'm not exactly sure, unfortunately, kind of maybe what's leading to that decrease, Isabel, if you heard any?
I'm really not 100% sure. I know fewer vets are accepting them, so it's a limited number of vets accepting them, and it's limited amount of appointments to get in there, and then the hours are all weird, so people are struggling to get in to use them. That's about the only thing I can think that would affect it, but we do hand them out pretty frequently.
Okay. Well, I know WAD was having staffing issues, mm-hmm. for sure, and so they were
There's vet shortages, there's vet tech shortages, there's supply shortages, there's just about everything. It's unfortunate, but... Okay. So, I mean, you know, in turn, I know this has been something that we, even as, you know, as a team and the committee, that has been on one of our priorities, and I think that's good. But in terms of widening that usage, I'm not really sure what the strategy would be. We've, and like Isabel mentioned, it's kind of like a similar situation with the licensing, where we don't really have the jurisdiction. We can't tell clinics to accept the voucher. We can try to encourage it. But again, our bandwidth is kind of limited.
Is there difficulty with them getting paid on this voucher? What would be the reason why a veterinarian would not want to use the voucher?
That's a great question.
So what I've heard, I don't know how accurate this is, I've just asked a couple vets when I've been there. One thing that they've been having trouble with is people not filling them out properly, so having improper information where they're not able to process the voucher. They've had trouble with people just handing them blank ones a couple times. I've heard that. Other than that, I think it might just be the process of having to accept the voucher and process it and then get a hold of the county, get the money from the county, and then tell the animal owner, you have this amount left that you need to pay us. And I think there's a lot of doubt, possibly, in a lot of ways it could go wrong, that are making vets hesitant. Because with the economy right now and with staff shortages, they have a limited amount of space and the vets need to pay their bills too.
Is it possible to make the voucher simpler?
Yeah.
We could. They're pretty simplistic already. But there's a certain amount of information we need to be able to process
Could we maybe have a copy of a voucher?
Sure.
Send that to us so we can look at it.
Yeah.
Maybe we could come up with a better idea of how to simplify the voucher so when somebody applies to get the voucher, have it basically the voucher filled out for them so that when they do take it in, it isn't like, oh, I forgot to fill this out, I can't remember this, it's going to take me 10 minutes to do this, and I already went online and got this thing, and I've already done all this work.
Because my pet's freaking out. Chaos.
Yeah. So I can see where, you know, I forgot my glasses, they're still at home. The dog's on the end of the lead, and you know, there's a lot of reasons. But my other part of the understanding is if we don't use the money that we have designated, was it $7,000 or something? It goes to the general fund and we lose it for the year. They don't roll it over and give us $14,000 next year.
Well, so what we tend to do each fiscal year is we budget a certain amount for it. So you're correct in that it doesn't roll over, but we always assure that we do have money budgeted for that program or for that service. So it would never be completely unfunded. You know.
How much does the vet office get paid to sell a license?
That's a great question.
I believe they get at least a $1. I know Green Hill gets $5 out of every license they sell. Other vets, I think it's $1 or $2 for every license they sell.
There is animosity between the vets and the county over that.
Oh, sure.
Because the office staff costs them a lot more than that to take care of that issue,
right,
to sell a license.
Sure.
And we've advocated for quite a long time to increase that significantly, and the county's never done it. And that might be part of the reason what's going on right here, too.
That could be.
Just divorce yourself from the county because we get screwed.
Right.
So there's a possibility that if you would really think about increasing that, this might go away.
Right.
It might increase, is what I mean.
Sure. No, and that's, I definitely understand that point. I think it's a great point. To speak on behalf of LCAS, I guess, I would say that our budget, our division, or our program budget has, as we mentioned, always been kind of lean. I think we certainly could do that, but I think that would require probably more funding from the general fund to make.
Well, the point is, if you get more people buying licenses by maybe giving half the cost of a license to the vet,
right,
instead of bringing it in here, you have more people in the system so that they can stay in the system.
True.
It will pay off in the end.
Short term, for long term.
Yes.
But it has to be significant to pay for their office staff.
Right.
They don't always get the cream of the crop, first of all,
that's
for office staff.
Right.
And second place, all expenses are going up. And it would really make a difference if we could. We've been talking about increasing licenses in this committee forever.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point, we were up to 43% compliance. Now we're down, who knows what, 30, 25? I don't know, somewhere thereabout, because things have changed.
Sure.
But if we could get them up again, that would make a big difference for the income for the county.
That's true.
For LCAS.
Right. And I think in terms of licensing, that's something I'll look into as well in terms of our compliance rate. So right now I think we have around 30,000 active in compliant licenses. So we'd have to look in and see what our, which is, it's very hard to calculate, but what our kind of animal ownership statistics in unincorporated Lake County.
It would help us to know what the compliance is now.
Yes.
Because I know at one time it was about 43%.
Right.
But that's after we brought Bill Bruce down and implemented some of his ideas.
Okay.
It raised.
Okay.
And then it went from, it was Health and Human Services, then it went to Parks.
Right.
And that's when things started going down.
I see.
Has there ever been any discussion about offering licensing for cats?
We have talked about it, and the cat people just blow up about it. But yeah, it is a possibility. It was working for quite a while in Calgary. It was working well. They had about a 50% compliance rate.
Well,
I understand that's
changed.
These poor
cats that run at large, you know, it would be nice if they had something on them, you know, call so-and-so or something. And I understand that a cat climbing a tree can get
right.
its collar.
Right.
Caught or something like that. Yeah.
Right. Well, in Calgary, they didn't allow cats to roam. They would be ticketed if they were found roaming and found the owner. So that was an issue. But all that went by the wayside. They changed animal control and things sort of went belly up out there.
There's three cats that like to come into my yard. I'm like, if you pee on things, you won't be here anymore.
We have neighbors across the street that have almost 2 acres, right? And we're just over a half acre. Their cats are over at my place all the time. It's like, wait a minute, you have to have better hunting over there. I don't know why sleeping on my porch is better than theirs. It's kind of funny.
Well, awesome. Well, again, thank you for the feedback on this. I have some great notes. So on the next meeting, I will come back with some compliance statistics for the committee. Also look into, I don't know if internally we've talked about it much, but licensing for cats, just to see if it has been something we have discussed that I'm just not aware of. And then
Multnomah County has a CAT requirement, a licensing requirement. I think it's Multnomah County.
Okay, and I will take a look at that. And then also I'll look into increasing kind of the vendor profit for licensing and see what that might look like. Because yeah, I think that would definitely make it more attractive to our vendors and partners.
I mean, if they're spending $5 to $6 a license to pay their staff, pay their credit card fees, and they're gaining $1,
it's really worth it.
Yeah,
exactly.
And what does it mean about the bandwidth issues?
Well, so the spay-neuter clinic, due to staffing, maybe in terms of not wanting to. So I think just like we kind of mentioned with some of the agencies not wanting to accept the voucher, not wanting to process it, not wanting to maybe track or add that as a function that they have to do, they've just notified us and told us they'd rather not.
Right.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Eugene Spay-Neuter has been having some issues keeping consistent staffing rates around. So they're trying to focus their issues on people when they're open, who they can help immediately and get as many animals spayed.
Well, obviously something needs to be done because things are going backwards.
Sure. Yeah. And then this is another one, so not to keep putting this bell on the spot, but this is one that I'll go over this. She might be able to speak to some things that aren't on here. But just so in the previous slides, we talked about a lot of the administrative functions or a lot of the duties that our admin team are performing. In the same light, our animal welfare officers are just as important, and so I wanted to really highlight some of the different tasks and field responses that they are tasked with handling and managing as well. So I have four different types of our dispatch types, essentially. There are plenty of others, but these are four of the kind of most common that, again, you can find on your stat spreadsheets as well, or stat reports that are included. So if you look at just going kind of down each column, dangerous behavior related calls they did decrease in fiscal year 21-22. It did increase a little bit back up in 2022-23. At this point, I'm not really able to tell the trend, but probably trending about the same as probably last fiscal year.
Is your fiscal year July 1st to June 30th?
Correct.
Yes. Yeah. So that's just the last 3 months.
Yeah.
I would like to see numbers going way back before 2020-21.
Yes.
Could we get 10, 15 years to see what those numbers on dangerous behavior was?
We might be able to. I know, since as you mentioned, like with the program switching from Health and Human Services to Parks, I think we could probably pull the information from the Parks switch.
That would be helpful because of the massive importation we've been getting with some rescues that aren't as responsible as others.
Oh, sure.
Dangerous dogs are probably getting adopted out.
That's true.
I'm wondering if that wouldn't help us understand if that's the case or if that's not the case.
Okay.
The pandemic didn't help a lot either. Since everything was shut down, young dogs weren't getting socialized.
Right.
So now
that's
free to get socialized, there's a little bit more incidence of dog reactive and human
reactive
dogs.
Right, so I agree, because in judging dog shows, I'm seeing some dogs in some breeds that are showing behaviors that are very surprising to me. Probably because of the pandemic. They
We've been seeing
socialized.
A lot of that in year-old, two-year-old dogs.
Right.
Just haven't been socialized properly.
You're right.
I always take a beat when I hear that, because my mom has two COVID puppies.
Mm-hmm.
There's no issue. She put the work and the training into the dogs, and the dogs
That's
are fantastic.
The thing.
People are lazy, and they're not going to do what their dogs need to have done. It's not a pandemic issue. It's an order issue.
Mm-hmm.
And an overbreeding issue for non-appropriate breeds, not breeds.
Well, that actually goes along with it, because during the pandemic, when people were home and they went, well, gosh, I can breed this dog now and have puppies now, whether it was registered or not, because they're going to be there to take care of them because they couldn't go to work and stuff, And then all of a sudden they found all these people wanted the dogs because they were staying home. Now they felt, I'm staying home, I can have a pet, it'll help watch me while I'm doing my computer work at home or whatever. And so there was, I think, more breeding done.
Absolutely.
During the time.
Yes.
So your numbers are up of both cats and dogs because people were home and they felt they could take care of them.
And demand was up.
Does LCAS get any money from breeders? Do they demand a license for a breeding program so that people who are in charge of making more animals are paying for that increase of population?
Yes. Our breeders, when we find them, are supposed to go through land management. They get approved to have a breeding program on their property, and then they apply for a commercial kennel license through Lane County Animal Services, which they have to renew every year.
And actually, that brings up, we should have a hobby kennel license as well, not just commercial.
We have commercial and non-commercial.
Non-commercial?
Yeah.
Can you give me what it means? What does non-commercial mean?
Non-commercial is just someone who has 8 or more dogs on their property, but they're not actively breeding and creating more dogs. And then a commercial kennel license is for a breeder who is breeding dogs and selling puppies.
So, in other words, if a breeder breeds dogs, he can't get a non-commercial license. So there needs to be a hobby license.
That's my understanding.
And there needs to be a hobby license.
What about those who are doing guardianships for a lot of their breeding stock? They're placing those dogs in another home, mm-hmm. taking them, breeding them, tabbing the litters, placing those puppies, and then sending them back to the guardian home.
We've been discussing satellite breeders like that and trying to come up with a good game plan because we don't necessarily have the authority to tell people they can't do that. We've been trying to think of a good way to manage that, and we just haven't quite had the answer yet. This has just been a recent discussion we started.
So on the commercial breeding license, what's the number of dogs that's required to have that?
8 or more fertile dogs. That's the requirements to get any kennel license.
The problem with a commercial license is it indicates a business. But mm-hmm. most people, I can't say all people, obviously, most people, it's not a business, it's a hobby.
So for commercial, it's people who provide 2 or more litters of puppies a year and sell them. Right. So the non-commercial is just 1 or 2 litters of puppy. So if you hit 3 litters, you have to get a commercial kennel license because at that point, you're technically making money. And if you're just doing 1 or 2 litters as a hobby, then you get a non-commercial kennel license.
But if a person is required to get a commercial license because mm-hmm. of numbers in their breeding, they're still viewed as a business. Mm-hmm. And yet, I can prove, we've had those numbers. And I can prove we've lost money year after year after year.
Right.
It's not a business at all. It's a hobby.
No, that's just what we call it.
I know it's called that, but just like you mentioned guardianship, the word is very important because guardianship means you don't have the same rights as if you're the owner.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we object to the term. And I also object to commercial when it's actually a hobby
mm-hmm.
because it's the term that indicates by law that it's a business.
Mm-hmm.
And that's wrong. We need a hobby license. Now, what the requirements are, that might be up for discussion, but I feel there should be a third designation.
Okay, so we can definitely work on that. And then, so in terms of the next one being neglect or abuse cases, it looks like that did decrease in 2021 to 2022, increased for 2022 and 2023. Isabel, any observations?
That was when we had a period with no officers, so we were still receiving the same amount of neglect abuse calls, but we didn't have an officer to go out and investigate. So we were transferring those to Lane County Sheriff's Office.
Gotcha.
So that's why our numbers went down. The number of calls did not decrease, unfortunately.
So really, then, they are probably pretty consistent.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's pretty consistent.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. Okay. And then in terms of dog at large, we do have a decent increase. Is that just because we've been able to respond
We've been able to respond to more of them. And then we just came out of summer, which is part of it. People like to let their dogs off leash and dogs take off. So it's just kind of been, I think, possibly poor ownership in some areas.
Maybe that could be.
In a sense.
So dogs at large, is that also dogs that just got dropped off someplace? Is that what, do you include those?
So those are normally included in our abandonment.
Okay.
If we can, so we do the investigation and we investigate if they got dropped off or was someone out hiking and their dog slipped the collar and took off in the bushes. So we don't make that determination until we're closing the case and we've figured out where the dog came from. And then it's either dog at large or abandonment. And then we include confined strays in dog at large, I believe.
Now that they have the GPS collars for dogs and stuff like that, is that something that the county is going to tell people that they could, you know, purchase and do any reviews on them or something like that? Because I think a lot of people mistakenly think that the microchip they have put in their dog is like a GPS, and it is not. But now that a GPS is available, that you could get a GPS collar. I think that if that type of information were available, that might solve some of the dog at large problem. I think a lot of people just don't know that it's actually available now.
So we do let people know that they have GPS tracking collars, and then we also invite them to look into wireless boundary fences, invisible fences, things like that. So if the dog does get out of the yard, it can still be contained on the property. We look into how we give them advice on how to train the dog to stay in the yard, how to enrich the dog's environment so they're not bored and they don't feel the need to go on adventures, give them toys, lick mats, things to do.
And then it goes down, part of it goes down to the economy.
Exactly.
Situation.
Yeah.
It is unfortunate.
Be able to buy a GPS collar.
Yeah. GPS collars are very expensive.
Yeah.
So
well, the invisible fence is pretty expensive too. Our
so
neighbors
normally,
around, our neighbors around the corner put it on their dog's lay right 15 feet from those flags. They know exactly where that is.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
But if they're a chasing dog, if a squirrel goes running across the yard, that only zaps them once and they do know it.
Yeah, yeah.
What is the fine for a dog that's at large or like a repeat offender?
So a dog at large, if... we normally do a one or two strikes first. You know, if your dog gets out, dogs do get out occasionally.
Yep.
You know, we're not going to slap a citation on you on the first offense. A fertile dog at large is $265. A spayed or neutered dog at large is $165. So.
Benefits you to keep
them. It does. It does benefit you to keep them in. But accidents do happen. Dog knocks you over. Dog gets loose. Things do happen, and we
it's
do understand that.
Offenders. Like my neighborhood consistently has two dogs that like to roam the neighborhood. And I was like, no, you didn't.
Exactly.
You cannot come in my yard and growl at me.
You
need to stay home.
Yeah, I mean, and Isabel could probably confirm, but I think one thing our team really does try to do is to work with people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we know, hey, it's an accident, if we know someone is, you know, doing something with malicious intent, I think we, you know, do what's needed to help cease that. But as Isabel mentioned, accidents do happen. We try to,
for sure,
to accommodate.
I think people are those repeat offenders.
Yes.
Where,
right.
Like, I picked the same dog up six times. Like, what's going on?
Right.
Yep. That's so. When you're like, all right, I'm sorry.
Do the fines and fees go back into the funds for the animal welfare?
They do.
Or do they go to the general fund?
No, they go back
they go
to LCAS.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, as we kind of just talked about, you know, abandonment statistics have gone up. I could be wrong. I feel like there could be some pandemic relation to some of that, simply because, you know, ownership did increase quite a bit during the pandemic. So, you know, there could be people who were saying, I really can't take care of this animal anymore or something like that. So that could be.
It's kind of a yarn ball. Ownership increased, the economy's gone downhill, shelters are already full, people can't afford to feed them, shelters can't take them because they don't have the space to take them. It's just kind of one big mess that we all got to work on together, unfortunately.
Sure.
But we have definitely seen an increase in abandonment.
Okay. And then, as I mentioned, there are quite a few other dispatch you know, related services that we respond to that I didn't include on here, like dog bites, impounds, return to owner. Kind of before we, this is really the last statistic slide, but before we move on, is there anything you think would be good to highlight for the committee?
Not particularly. You covered just about it. These are the four main columns that we do, really, the four main classifications of calls we have.
Okay.
A lot of it recently has just been neglect and dangerous behavior, unfortunately.
Sure. Okay. And then any other questions before? Okay. So on, so I know that was kind of a downer, I think, but hopefully for these next few slides, what we'll do is highlight some of the different things that we have done, in particular in response to emergency events. So the first thing is really just talking about our livestock shelters, which have been successful for the years since 2020. We've been working with the Land Event Center to establish a livestock shelter. And we've done that for wildfire events, including the Holiday Farm Fire, excuse me, and the Cedar Creek Fire as well. These shelters, not just to read off the slide, but they have really have served as like hubs for donations of supplies. And really, I think Isabel could definitely speak to this as well. I think they've been really well received within the community. I think being able to have a hub, especially with consistency, where the public do know that, you know, in a wildfire event, if needed, LCAS will, you know, stand this up, I think has really given people kind of peace of mind in an emergency situation like a wildfire. And then in preparation for future events, we've done quite a bit. We've created a volunteer standby list. So in previously, at least in my working on these livestock shelters in previous years, we've seen a tremendous amount of community participation and assistance. But tracking all of it can sometimes be kind of difficult, especially when you're working through an emergency situation. So what we've really tried to do going forward is streamline some of those processes to really kind of be proactive. So as I mentioned, we're working on the volunteer standby list. We've collected applications for potential shelters, transporters, and shelter-in-place properties. This is something that sometimes in those wildfire events, we've really had to kind of work through it within the fire itself, so to speak. But as I mentioned, we're really trying to be proactive so that if this is, hoping it's not, but if this does become a kind of a reoccurring event, we'll have things in place to where we know exactly how to respond. Every situation is a little bit different, but at least we'll have kind of a framework. Mm-hmm. Anything you'd like to?
No, that's about it. We've done a lot this summer, especially for this fire, that made things go a lot easier. We had the shelter set up, open, and ready to accept animals for the fire this year in about 25 minutes with four people. So we've definitely streamlined the process. We've come to a great understanding with the Lane Event Center, where they basically leave up pens and stalls after the Lane County Fair. They just leave them up until November, so that the second there's a fire or an emergency, we can just come on in, get set up, get stalls bedded, and we are ready to go for whatever comes in. So we've definitely made some huge progress.
I have a question. During the Holiday Farm Fire, there were coordination issues between LCAS and the Sheriff's Office.
Mm-hmm.
Have those been, have there been any issues with that since, like this last year? Everything been ironed out?
Everything's been ironed out. The Sheriff's Tonopassi actually came to the training I put on earlier this year for emergency preparation. Good. We've all kind of playing on the same page now. We have a memorandum of understanding with them. And I think going forward, we have a great plan set out.
Okay, I have a question. Mm-hmm. Communication with your radios.
Mm-hmm.
For the Holiday Farm Fire, you couldn't coordinate with the Sheriff's Office. Your radio couldn't reach the sheriff directly. I don't know if they do now. It remains to be seen. But can you communicate with the posse directly if you have to,
mm-hmm.
or do you have to go through your dispatcher?
No, so what we've done is we've taken spare radios that only work in the areas we programmed them to work. You probably know a little bit more about this than I do, but it's my understanding. We program them to work in the areas where the fire is, and then everyone who's going up there to evacuate livestock gets one of those radios. So the sheriff will have their regular radio, we'll have our regular radio. And then
you communicate directly with each other.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
That's wonderful.
And our volunteers.
Right. Super. Beautiful. Very good.
Yep.
Unless I was incorrect.
No, that is correct.
Okay, cool.
I do recall
that.
Good.
Okay. And then kind of on the same subject, so just looking at emergency preparedness overall, as I mentioned, as these emergencies have become more common, we are striving to ensure that we, and alongside the community, are prepared to respond and navigate through it. So really being proactive has been a priority that we've set. And just as Isabel mentioned, we've gone from taking potentially more than a day or about a day to set up a shelter to where now we can do that within minutes, you know, easily. So happy to say that. Just as Isabel spoke to, we do have that memorandum of understanding, which is going to help with, you know, those communication issues and bandwidth. So we're excited for that relationship as well. Just as Isabel kind of spoke to as well. No, you're good. No, thank you. See, being proactive, that's what we're talking about. We organized an emergency disaster volunteer training event in June, which was put on the, I want to say the Register Guard. I was actually going to bring some of the articles for you all. The Register Guard did put that out there. What did the response kind of look like for that?
It was really cool. We had about over 30 people show up as volunteers. It was kind of an unfortunate. We had several people who canceled due to the weather and just not being able to get there, having summer plans. We did two different presentations. We did one for shelter in place and transport of livestock for evacuations. And then we did one for people volunteering with the shelter, which ran them back to back. The community was really supportive. They were there, happy to learn. We got everyone's information, did a centralized volunteer list, split into people who wanted to do transport, shelter in place, people who wanted to help with the shelter. And I mean, it was just a really great experience overall, honestly.
Have you actually been able to use that?
Yeah. So not so much this year. The shelter only had two animals in it, so I didn't need to call in the troops. But I had people emailing, calling me, saying, hey, I'm on standby. Let me know if you need me. And, I mean, it's great.
So you didn't take in any evacuated animals?
We took two.
Two.
But that was it. It was pretty small. We were a little surprised.
And then also, so our other animal welfare officer, Officer Manning, mentioned at one of the previous meetings that we did or had that we participated in an interagency Cascadia Rising training event earlier this year as well. So on a, not on the wildfire subject, but still in terms of emergency preparedness, that training, Chief Foreman, was super informative and beneficial. Did you attend that?
So I didn't attend. I had some calls, okay. But then we had a meeting about it, and me and Officer Manning went through our paperwork, streamlined our process, cut it down to about two forms to get animals checked in and out of the shelter, and just completely rewrote the process from the previous year. So she had some great information, and she shared it with us.
So perfect.
We learned a lot.
Nice. So yeah, so just, you know, in terms of what we're doing, just kind of to recap for emergencies, I think we all understand that this is something that we will always have to deal with in some capacity. Hopefully they won't be wildfires, hopefully they won't be Cascadia, but what we're really wanting to do as a program is just to be prepared, just to have everything lined up to where hopefully you never have to use it, but if you do, you have, you know, the capacity to.
Now, you said that they do have two pickups. Are the pickups four-wheel drive, so if there was snow or something like that, they can go up and get them? Okay.
They are, yeah.
Four-wheel drive, and both have the ability to tow trailers.
And then to talk a little bit about our community impact and understanding your time, I'll kind of try to speed through some of the rest of these slides. But I just wanted to share, this is one thing when I was putting together this presentation that stuck out to me that I thought I would share. Received some feedback from a member of the community. And really just kind of the highlight though that stuck out to me was just that the individual voice that they weren't maybe comfortable receiving help, which a lot of people, you know, it's an understandable feeling. But really, really kind of warmed my heart to hear that, which I know it to be true, that our LCAS staff really did everything possible to accommodate that individual, especially in an emergency situation. It's already, you know, it's already a tough time, but to know that our staff was really able to make an impact like that really was monumental to me. But yeah. Another thing I wanted to share is our Officer Merritt being on the front page of Eugene Weekly. There were actually a couple other Eugene Weekly articles that I wanted to share with the committee. One that featured Michael Johns in a wildfire situation. But this was something I just wanted to share. The article itself, if you do have a chance to read it, it is a really, really nice article that speaks to you know, some of the functions that we do during emergencies. But yeah, just kind of showing, I know with the livestock shelters, that has been one of our, I think, largest opportunities to really directly benefit the community in a situation like that. And then some other examples of community impact that I wanted to speak to. So in looking at our spay and neuter voucher, as we discussed, we've increased that from $50 to $100. We recently participated in the Bark in the Park event, so we shared a booth with the City of Eugene and provided some informational handouts and materials. We also worked with OCHS with their mobile clinic, so that was kind of providing dog licenses, educating the public. At the Lane County Fair, I don't know if it was actually a part of it. Was it the Lane County Fair, or was it just a separate FireWise?
I believe it was Lane County Fair. We weren't able to attend in person, but Officer Manning provided FireWise with some really informational pamphlets to have out there.
Okay. And then, thank you. And then some grant opportunities as well. So we did receive a grant award of $2,000 from the Oregon Community Foundation in March. So most of these are just from this year, for the most part. So these are pretty, I think, pretty good examples of some of the community outreach that we're trying to do. Now that we are fully staffed, our capacity to do more events like these is more possible. I know in previous years when we were a little bit understaffed, it was a little bit harder just due to bandwidth. But now that we are fully staffed, we're able to do more of these types of events. And just like with OCHS and that mobile clinic, we're really wanting to leverage our relationships with some other agencies as well. Yeah. And then last but not least, I did want to talk a little bit about some of the progress we've made through the LCAS Advisory Committee. So we did appoint Tasha to the committee, so very happy that you've joined and are a part of the group here. We recently updated our committee bylaws and really just changed those, really kind of just updated them, made sure that they were aligned with new county committee policies and whatnot. And then last but not least, one of our major accomplishments. So we've actually made quite a few different donations or allocations of funding from the Harriet Ruby Smith Trust. We bought I'm trying to think of what that was. We donated a certain portion to WAGS for their cat TNR program. And then right after that, that's where we did the $10,000 for the livestock trailer as well. So the committee has been immensely helpful in really kind of making those direct impacts, not just for LCAS, but for our larger community as well. And I wanted to share some photos. I don't know if you hadn't seen it.
Well, that's really nice. Where did they find it?
So they found, oh, you can speak to that.
We went to a trailer sale space in Halsey. I believe it was Diamond K Trailers.
Diamond K, yep.
Cool,
and,
looks good.
They got us a really good deal on that. That is a 2023, I believe it's a 16-foot stock trailer. We used it in the fires, didn't do much, but it went over to the Lane Event Center and it sat there and looked pretty. We didn't have any huge calls for service, but
where's it stored? It's
under cover back here by Fleet, where it is protected and hanging out.
Is it labeled yet?
It is. Not in these pictures.
Yes,
but
these were the original pictures from when we purchased it. So I do not have, I did not have one that had the stencils on it, but I was looking for it though. But yes, yeah, so thank you again to the committee for making this possible. Because yeah, you know, funding for our little program is sometimes, you know, really limited. So this will make a huge difference. And it's a very roomy trailer as well, as you'll probably see there. So. So yeah, and then the last thing I wanted to show was just some different examples, an image of our Animal Services administrative team, and then Officer Manning as well. You can probably speak to some, one of these, actually a couple of these pictures were provided by Officer Merritt. Can you speak to the cat one? I was curious.
That's Squirm. He was an owner surrender. She's just bad place, too many cats, so we helped her out and took him to the shelter, and he got adopted about 10 seconds later. But his name is Squirm, and yeah, that is his candy corn toy that he loves. So, as far as I know, he's doing great. And then,
was that your dog?
Yeah, that was my cat.
Okay.
He got, the reason I call him Squirm is because he got out of the carrier when I had him in the truck, and I was driving down Coburg Road, and all of a sudden there's a kitten on my shoulder, and he was just kind of squirming all over. So I ended up having to hold him with one hand on my chest and try and contain him so I could pull over and put him back in the carrier.
Oh, okay.
He's like, I'm helping. Go on, drive.
And then for that picture on the right, was there a story?
That was a call we got about a black lab who was hanging out on this lady's porch. He was sunbathing, and I couldn't get him to get out of the sun when it was about one of those days where it was almost 100 degrees outside, and he didn't want to get out of the sun. He was having the time of his life. So it took me about 40 minutes to get him to calm down and come over to me, and then he just was the most lovely little puppy. Yeah, he was just a stray. His owner picked him up that afternoon, actually, from Greenhill. So he's back home safe and sound.
And then, yeah, that last photo is just a snapshot from one of our livestock shelters as well. But, yes, yeah. So thank you all. You know, hopefully that didn't take too long to work through, but really just wanted to highlight some of the accomplishments that we've made as a program. There are many, many more. I'm sure I probably could add to that, and you could be here all night if you wanted to be. But we really do have a great team. I think we've got some great synergy that our team, you know, is exemplifying. We've got, a great group of individuals who legitimately, like Officer Mary, you know, care for animals in a truly sincere way, you know. So, not to speak, you know, forever about LCAS, but really, I in my capacity, I don't work directly with that group as much as I you know, wish sometimes I could.
Direct enough.
I'm glad to hear that. But you know, I'm really proud of what we've done as a team. So thank you. And then with that, are there any questions? Anything I left out?
I can say with what we heard from Sasha and what we heard today, you should be proud of the progress you've made as far as communication between your groups and putting things together when there's an emergency.
Definitely.
I think you've done well.
Thank you.
Greenhouse.
It was a great presentation.
Yeah,
thank you.
You did a good job. Thank you, Nick.
Well, you're welcome. Well, thank you.
Thanks. Greenhouse has definitely been outstanding.
Sure.
And our relationship with them will hopefully only grow from here.
Right, exactly.
I agree.
Well, thank you all. That was all I had for the presentation. I know we have probably a few other agenda items, but that was all I had. So thank you.
All right. Well, after that wonderful presentation, do we have a report on current Lane County Animal Services activity?
Is there anything you'd like to
see? We all have our handouts.
There's not a whole lot. Operations are as normal for October, and we're just plugging away, everything going on. It's not anything super exciting.
No news is good news, exactly.
I like no news.
Well, Linda, it sounds like that's about all we have on that.
Any other discussion items?
Not for me.
And or anything for next month's agenda?
So for next month's agenda, I'll try to compile some information that was requested at today's meeting. So to get us some compliance statistics, to at least get some information on potentially increasing kind of third-party revenue for licensing sales, to also bring in a copy of one of the spay and neuter vouchers for the committee to see. To look into the potential for licensing of cats, or just to see maybe why we haven't done it, or what it would take to do that going forward. The dangerous dog statistics I can probably compile. I will say that might be an effort just because of the different changes that we've had over the years, but I'll do my best to see what I can compile on that.
And if it's just, every 5 years or so, it doesn't have to be, just so we get an idea if there's any changes.
Okay. No, certainly.
I do know that will be an undertaking because almost everything before 2021 is paper. So it will involve us digging through paper records, scanning them in.
It's research.
So it will be an undertaking, but we'll see what we can get to.
Exactly. And then look at potentially, which I don't think would be too much of an issue, but either renaming the non-commercial license or creating a hobby license. I think that's just some programming in our system. And then I think that's all the notes I had. One thing I did want to pose to the committee was just, I know we, and if you want to, it's totally not a problem. I know we tend to provide paper agendas at every meeting. Just looking at potential for cutting down of paper, do you want to keep receiving the paper agenda? Is that helpful? Or if we just sent a digital agenda, or even if we had maybe the agenda itself, but the stats separate, would that be okay? Is there a certain preference you have in terms of how you receive the materials?
The email's fine for me. I actually viewed everything that you had sent before, and I was like, perfect. And then you're like, here. And I'm like, now I have a personal copy.
Okay.
I don't have any preference.
Well, I tend to write for the same way.
I do too, so don't feel bad.
I kept them all, but I don't necessarily look at them, but I do have.
Okay.
They're there if you need them.
Mm-hmm. It's just the top, I do, these online are fine, but I like to have the agenda.
The agenda itself. Okay. Sure. So, so if we, because that would still cut down on paper. So if we just provided the agenda printout itself, that would work. Okay. Perfect.
If you were able to, we could even look into just having the stats up on that.
We could.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, definitely do that.
Okay. Yeah. If you're willing to do that, of course.
No, that's totally fine.
Okay.
Perfect. And then other than that, that's all I have.
All right. If there's nothing else regarding either discussion or items for next month's agenda, then I think we can adjourn.
I move we adjourn.
Second.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.